Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here. One of our favorites, Dr. Lauren Stryker, has just stepped into the studio.
Hi, Dr. Lauren.
Doing triple duty. Just came from a menopause event.
We're trying to see if we can make Ro blush by the conversation off the air.
This wasn't a blushing kind of conference. We were talking about menopause in the workplace, which is a big topic because we're going to be talking about brains in a little bit, baby brains. But, you know, baby brains and menopause brains have a lot in common. And it's actually it's a big area of concern because women, when they're at the peak of their professional careers, are very often in their 40s, and that's when they're going through perimenopause, and suddenly they can't sleep, they can't think straight, they can't remember why they walked into the room, and they don't want to tell their boss that, right?
Because, oh my God, I'm having menopause. Is it possible for me to have?
Menopause.
They do have same sort of like a chemical thing?
You know, actually, I've done a number of Steve Harvey segments when he was still on the air, and the first Steve Harvey segment I ever did was on menopause.
He's still on every air, by the way.
They should remember that. Right, exactly. Yeah. But the first segment I ever did was menopause, and all I'm thinking is, A, why do they have a gynecologist on talking about menopause, and B, why are we talking about menopause when it's like, no big deal, we should be talking about menopause. But
he didn't want to hear that, I bet.
You know what, it was a good segment. It was just
I'm just confused. I think it's stress. Anyway, that's my problem, not yours. All right, let's start.
No,
first
it could be my problem.
It's true. With the baby brain story, this is interesting. There's a new study out about the amount of screen time that really young children are getting because parents just hand them their iPhones or iPads, right?
Exactly. And not only parents, but one of the big issues is a lot of kids, you know, they're sent off to daycare because their parents are working and you don't know what's going on. And it turns out in a lot of these daycare facilities, it's a whole lot easier to stick these little kids in front of a screen to keep them busy than to interact with them in other ways. So the issue is, as you say, you know, what is this doing to those little brains? And it turns out it has quite an impact. And that's actually not surprising because there's a concept of what we call brain plasticity, meaning how quickly the brain is influenced and how quickly it can change. And the younger the kid, the more the plasticity, which is why it's a whole lot easier to learn a second language when you're 4 than when you're 40 or 50. It's because your brain absorbs that stuff so much easier and changes so much more quickly. But by the same token, you put a brain like that in front of a screen that's doing all kinds of things and you don't really know what the impact is going to be. So this study was taking a look at that. And one of the things they did was they did MRIs of these kids' brains and they saw that there were actual physical changes that they could detect on the MRI in the kids who had a lot of screen time.
That is fascinating to hear because I remember when my baby was 2, that's 5 years ago, that the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended zero screen time because they didn't know how it impacted the brain.
That's right.
And I remember thinking, zero screen time? I don't know a single mom who hasn't at least occasionally said, here, watch Sesame Street just to quiet down for a second or whatever. And now it kind of has gone up to, what, 1 hour or something
like
that?
Well, no, it depends on the age. American Academy of Pediatrics came out and said up to 18 months, you're still at zero screen time. They do give a little bit of leeway for FaceTime, I guess, to talk to parents who are at work or whatever.
And interactive.
But they're saying by, you know, age 2, 3 to 5 or so, you're talking 1 hour a day. And quite frankly, that's not based on anything. It's not like anyone's done some amazing study that shows that everything's fine at 60 minutes and then at 65 minutes, you know, something bad happens.
But our parents plopped us in front of TVs.
They did. But you know what? A TV is also, first of all, different than screen time.
Well, the TVs back in our day. Where they were giving us cancer. I'll never forget that like my dad would go, get away from the eye, you gotta be 5 feet back. No, cut it off. 5 feet back. Right? I mean, I don't know what it was, but
nobody knew. It was like, you know, X-rays.
Right, cathode ray tube was going to kill us.
Yeah.
But now it turns out it didn't. But
wait. We don't know how smart you would be if you hadn't watched all the TV.
That's an excellent point. Thank you for playing along. But the issue is, these are interactive though, right? Because the kids are interacting at 3 years old.
These are interactive. They're very close. And you know, as I said, we have these MRIs that show that it's making a difference. The other thing also is the thing that they looked at specifically in this study, looking at these MRIs, is the myelinization of the brain. The myelinization is basically the coating of the little circuits in the brain, which isn't completely developed in a kid. And that coating is really important because that's what makes your brain circuits move more quickly, be more functional. And it turns out that in these kids that had a lot of screen time, they were not forming myelin as well as kids that didn't have the screen time. And
isn't that the basis for MS?
MS has to do with myelin, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But this, what they were looking at also was what parts of the brain, because you can map out the brain, and they found that it was very specific parts like language, certain learning parts. So while they're still getting new information, the bottom line is now we have objective data. It's not just, it sounds like a bad idea. We have objective data that shows that this is not good for your baby's brain. And nobody really knows at this point just how bad it is and what the long-term repercussions are going to be and, if you can make up for it and all of that. But bottom line is don't stick your kid right in front of a screen.
Why try?
Yeah.
There's a dramatic development at that age. Is there also some kind of evidence or studies to show even later it can have a serious derogatory impact?
But Anna, that's exactly the point, is what they're saying.
No, I mean, when they're young, but like a lot of screen time when you're 5 or 7 or 9 or 13, because there was that study in the New York Times had this last week just showing that screen time is growing dramatically in age groups, even like 7 to 12, 12 to 18, that over time it's growing. It's no surprise.
And it's a phenomenal question that nobody really knows the answer to, because it's difficult to study because there's so many other things that impact, of course, on brain development and brain function. But I think we're going to start to see more coming out about it, and it's not going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think of it this way, too. Between the iPhone and the iPad, they're a decade old. Right, the iPhone's a little older than the iPad, but it's a decade that we've been handing these little children. Because you walk into a restaurant, it's interesting. It's good for the restaurant industry because more families go to restaurants now than they used to, because they just hand the child the phone or the iPad, and then they're off to the races. They're quiet for 2 hours or whatever it is, and it's become its own version of back in my day of parenting, you just used cough medicine. That's how you got the kids to be quiet. All right, this is it's ugly. The whole thing is bad. You wonder. We don't have that answer here because we don't have a long term throw.
Right.
We can only look at 10 years of data, and you can now look at kids that were 2 or 3 at the time, and they're still under the age of 10.
That's right. That's right. And we also, there's a very big difference between a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. There's a big difference between a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. That's what makes pediatrics so challenging and why I didn't go into it.
Mm-hmm.
But that, among other reasons.
Well, yeah.
But
crying children.
But yeah, no, it is very hard to study this stuff. But I think that this particular study is so important because they do have some objective measurements. It's one thing to give a kid a test to see how they're memorizing things and learning, but it's another thing to actually do MRIs and see these physical changes.
Absolutely.
Can I keep you around for a second? Because I want to take a quick break, and then I want to come back, check the traffic and all that. On the other side, I want to ask you this. There's a story that's breaking right now that T.I., the rapper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's trending.
Trending.
He takes his daughter to a gynecologist every year to make sure that her hymen is intact. And how crazy is that? But it turns out that this kind of thing is maybe more common than we hope it is. I don't think it's very common, but there's a whole cultural thing that goes on here that we need to talk about. So let's do that on the other
side. And that'll bring people back after traffic for sure.
Yeah.
That's a good tease.
Thank you, Doctor. She's also a broadcaster,
she
too.
Is. She's great.
Yeah, look at her. She's always got that. Now you're taking notes. Don't steal anything from me. All right, here we go. Back with Dr. Lauren Strecker. But first, here's Lauren Lapko with the traffic. Dr. Lauren Strecker is with us. She is she's associate clinical professor at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine.
Professor now.
Hold on. Associate.
All right, Jeff, get in here. You're fired.
You just demoted her.
Hold on. Yeah.
Hello.
Hold on.
I worked hard for that full professor.
I bet.
Professor at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine.
Yep.
Obviously people have seen you and heard you on television and radio here for the last decade talking about all these things. And this story that is now trending, just popping up today, BuzzFeed has this story about T.I., who's a rapper and an actor. And you see him in some there's some kind of significant commercials that he's in now.
I've never heard of him before.
He's a.
But I trust you on that.
He's kind of common light, is what he is. He's one of those guys that, you know, you, it, they like some ideas Institute or some like
ideas
festival.
You're always giving a TED talk, right?
Right. Yeah, T.I. is a TED talk guy. He's got the guy that's got the headset on, and he's talking to people about important things. But he's an actor too. He's involved in action films. But he listen to this. This is crazy. Every year, he takes his daughter, who is now about to turn 18, but this has been going on since she was a little girl, to a gynecologist to make sure that her hymen is still intact. Now, first of all,
yeah, where do you start? Great. Yeah,
all right, I'm just going to leave that with you. Take it away.
You know, there are certain things that when I first hear about it, my first impulse is there are no words. There are just, like you said, I don't even know where to start with this, but let's just start with medically, okay, before we get into what father would take his daughter to a gynecologist to have her hymen checked. But if you just even talk medically, first of all, teenagers do not go to the gynecologist routinely because they do not need an exam unless they are having a problem. And I'm assuming that this young woman is not having a problem other than her father.
Her father's the problem.
Her father's the problem. So the idea that he is making sure, submitting her to an unnecessary medical exam, let's start with that, that is completely ridiculous. I'm not even going to get into the gynecologist who's agreed to this whole thing. But even the notion that you can examine someone and guarantee that they are a virgin is ridiculous. Because when I've spent a lifetime looking at hymens, unlike I'm assuming the two of you.
No, and I have not.
And they come in all shapes and sizes, and some women have a very thin, flimsy hymen that they're born with, which is why not everyone has excruciating pain and bleeds when they first have sex. And some women, it is, you know, thicker and there's a smaller opening. But the point is that you can't always visually tell if that hymen has been penetrated. And again, we're just talking medically. We're not getting into the whole other aspect of this. And in addition, when one defines sex, there's a lot of ways to be sexual without having intercourse. So he's really deluding himself if he thinks that this is proving. I mean, I have no idea what his daughter has or hasn't been doing. It's not the point. But this idea that he is proving that she is sexually pure because she has an intact hymen is absolutely ridiculous.
He was even in the interview, he said, though, the doctor told me there are other ways that the hymen can be broken, horseback riding, bike riding, stress.
Right, but she doesn't have a horse or a bike.
And then that's what he said. He said, well, she doesn't do any horseback riding, so just give me the results and tell me what they are.
Yeah.
Was his response.
And then the other thing that was pointed out in this BuzzFeed article is that the doctor said, well, I can't talk to you unless I have her permission, which is true. But you cannot ask a daughter's permission when her father is sitting a foot away from her. What is she going to say? You know, if I'm seeing a minor and I need to get the permission to speak to the parent, I get her alone and say, can I share this information with your parent? But quite frankly, if a parent brought their daughter to me and said, I would like you to examine her to tell me if her hymen is intact, I would decline to do so and not even get involved in any way.
Does the girl have any rights in that point? If you're 16, or I mean, can you say I don't want to have an exam, or I don't want my parents to know the results of the exam?
Yes, actually, it varies from state to state, but Illinois law has what they call emancipated minor status, and what that is specifically if someone needs an exam or a medical procedure that is specifically related to contraception, sexually transmitted infection, pregnancy, that they are allowed to do so without their parents' permission. So when I see
at 16, is that right?
Any age. I think it, you know what? It might be like 11, 12, but certainly it's 16. It's a teenager.
Yeah.
And so when I see a teenager, and I always tell the parent, this is a confidential relationship, and I will not be talking to you about the results of this exam without your daughter's permission. And then when I get the daughter alone, then I'll say, you know, is this something you want me to share with your mom and this? And sometimes they say, sure, absolutely. I tell her everything. And sometimes they say no. And the only time that law isn't as in place is if you think someone's been abused or if it's a life-threatening condition or something such as that. But to ask the young woman in front of her father kind of doesn't count. It's like if you think a woman's being abused and she's in the room with her abuser, it's very difficult to say to the woman, are you being abused? Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get rid of the guy first. So this is just wrong on every level, but not to mention, I mean, oh my God, this poor woman growing up with this father who is so narrow-minded.
Controlling every part of her.
And I don't know if he has a son or not, but I sure wonder if he's what he's doing with his son and having him inspected
now,
genitally, you know, every year.
He acknowledges this, that on her 16th birthday, the night of her 16th birthday, after everybody went to sleep, he put a post-it note on her bedroom door that said, "Gyno, 9:30 in the morning," on her 16th birthday.
Okay.
I mean,
that's horrifying.
And you know, I mean, obviously what he's trying to do is to
control her.
Control her and to keep her from having sex.
Okay.
And parents, we all have our ways of doing that.
Right.
There are other ways, aren't there?
I want to hear my way.
Yes.
That actually worked for a while. Now
sure.
My daughters are all grown up, so I can, you know, they know about my way. But when they were about 15 or 16, I just looked at them and I said, by the way, I'm a gynecologist. And as a gynecologist, I have special powers, so I will know when you are having sex.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't take it any further than that. And they just both nodded.
Isn't one of your daughters a sex therapist?
Now she is, yes.
Yeah. Do you think that she brings that up and she is therapizes people? Hey, you had a tub? Let me tell you something.
My mother
used to do.
But they believed that for a while.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And later on, you know, at some point, I forgot when, you know, one of them said to me, could you really know? And I'm like, no, how would I know? I just told you that.
Wow.
But the idea of taking them to, oh my God, you know.
So mild threats and intimidation are okay. Is that what you're saying?
You know, mild lying.
Yeah. Deception. Parental deception.
Deception.
It's the same thing. You know, the FBI uses that all the time. We told you that your co-conspirator already admitted to everything.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, that's you know,
listen, I knew one of my friends, she told her teenage daughters that there were secret cameras located at various spots throughout the house.
Oh, that's believable.
Well, that's actually very believable now. All right. Dr. Lauren Stryker,
thanks
you so
Dr.
much.
Lauren.
Full
Anytime.
Professor at Northwestern University's Fun School of Medicine. Thank you so much. We've got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming away in two. Chicago's very own.